When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Fluffy bread, fresh tortillas, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real. But Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and seriously, great taste. Made from a new recipe using heart-healthy olive oil and resistant wheat starch that acts as a prebiotic fiber to promote gut health, Hero Bread products have more of the dietary fiber and protein you want without the net carbs and sugar you don't. There's something for every craving. Sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas, plus monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites with no compromise. Like the 2-gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1-gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. That's HEROPOD at HERO.co.
Okay guys, today's episode is sponsored by Ballsy. Let's be honest, no one likes smelly balls, right? With Valentine's Day fast approaching, are you worried about jumping into the sack with your partner and being faced with plums that smell like Wotsits? Then Ballsy's Your Incredibles Nut Rub Cologne gift set may be the perfect gift for your partner. This set contains 3 different scented nut rub colognes, featuring their most popular scents, Forest and Fields and Ocean and Air, and their limited edition Drift and Dunes scent. The retail price of this gift set is $45, but with my promo code MORE20, you can get 20% off. Ballsy is made in the US, is cruelty-free with no parabens, sulfates, or synthetic dyes. They also offer a 30-day money-back guarantee if you don't think the products are the dog's bollocks. So don't balls it up this Valentine's Day. Head over to ballwash.com, that's ballwash.com, to buy the perfect gift that will satisfy both you and your man. And don't forget to use our promo code MORE20. You'd be nuts not to. Guys, just to let you know, I have a promo of another podcast that I would love for you to listen to playing at the end of this episode. So please stay tuned until then.
I have spent at different times a lot of time agonising over what was real and what wasn't. Did I ever mean anything to him? Was I purely a meal ticket right from the start? He had a very good sense of humour. He could be very personable, very attentive. I think that one of his skills and one of the reasons for such success that he's had is that he makes a study of the people he's around, establishes what their interests are, and then adopts them so that, you know, you find all these things that you have in common.
Hi, M&Ms. Welcome back to another episode of Murder and More. As always, I am your host, Kira. People can be very good at manipulating and deceiving. They make you believe that you can trust them and that they are a good person. They make you feel like your life is so much better because of them. The majority of these people have narcissistic tendencies and tend to have underlying mental health conditions that have gone untreated for too long. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 5th edition, or DSM-5 for short, states that a person with narcissistic personality disorder must possess at least 5 of the 9 criteria they have listed. These criteria are grandiosity, continually demeaning, bullying and belittling others, exploiting others for their own personal gain, lack of empathy for the negative impact they have on people's feelings and emotions, a fixation on fantasies of power, success and intelligence, a self-perception of being unique and superior, a need for continual admiration from others, a sense of entitlement to special treatment, and intense envy of others. Eventually, these mental illnesses and narcissistic qualities will more than likely lead to the occurrence of much more serious offences than simply manipulating a person. Typically, a much darker side of that individual will emerge in the end. Malcolm Webster was born on the 18th of April 1959 to Alexander Webster, a detective chief superintendent at the Metropolitan Police, and Odette Blewett, a former nurse. Malcolm's attention seeking began when he was a child, when he was prone to pretending to faint. He also had a penchant for starting fires, which if any of you are into your psychology or criminology will know is a red flag. The McDonald Triad says there are 3 major signs that if 2 or more are present in a person, it suggests they may have violent or sociopathic tendencies, or probably both. These are wetting the bed, abusing animals, and an obsession with starting fires. This triad was proposed in a paper in the American Journal of Psychiatry entitled, quote, "The Threat to Kill," end quote, written by a psychiatrist named J.M. McDonald. Malcolm left school at the age of 15 with no qualifications, but managed to find work as a binman, driver, office clerk, and eventually ended up becoming a nurse. Suspicious deaths around Malcolm Webster began when he was 30 years old, when he worked at a hospital on a children's ward in Abu Dhabi in 1989. An investigation into 3 suspicious deaths of 3 children under his care began within 6 months of Malcolm starting working there, which forced him to resign. All 3 children had died as a result of cardiac failure, which is highly unusual in a child. Whilst cardiomyopathy, ischemia or arrhythmias can occur in children and cause heart failure, it's more likely that a child with cardiac failure was born with some sort of heart defect. Islamic culture forbids postmortems and prefers quick burials, so unfortunately there wasn't enough evidence to prove that the children were murdered and for the police to investigate the deaths. Malcolm's former girlfriend, Beth Brown, suggested that he had been injecting himself with insulin, which brought up the possibility that that may be how Malcolm had killed the children. Insulin injection in people who are not diabetic can cause that person to die. It can cause the person to become hypoglycemic, meaning their blood glucose level is too low, and can cause bradycardia, or a low pulse, and hypotension, low blood pressure. If the hyperinsulinemia is not treated, the person can go into a hypoglycemic coma and will eventually pass away. It's believed that Malcolm's father used his influence as a senior police officer to help get him out of Abu Dhabi. Malcolm was described as a, quote, "thief, liar, and philanderer," end quote, who habitually pursued wealthy women and would rely on them to supplement his income he earned as a nurse. On the 3rd of September 1993, Malcolm married Claire Morris, a 32-year-old from Aberdeen in Scotland. Claire's brother Peter has fond memories of their childhood. Quote, "Yeah, we'd been a close family since we lost my dad when we were 7 and 9 respectively. We'd been very close. Claire was more the practical person. She'd help around the home a bit more. She was the gardener and that sort of thing. She was a good sister," end quote.
Believe that she met Malcolm at a party, after which the next day he came down and was showering her with flowers and gifts and what have you, and he seemed a gentleman. He seemed the sort of person that Claire would be interested in, and it didn't take long for her to fall for him.
On the exterior, it seemed like Malcolm and Claire were extremely happy in their relationship.
My first impressions of him was quite gregarious, quite a pleasant chap. Claire described him as a little bit roguish, but he seemed okay to me. Seemed fine. Yeah, I thought he was a real deal. I thought she'd done all right.
However, this was simply a facade, and throughout the couple's marriage, they had money problems, with regular arguments about Malcolm's excessive spending and landing them in a ton of debt as a result. Also, from the onset, Malcolm was drugging Claire with temazepam, a sedative that's part of a group of medications called benzodiazepines, used to treat insomnia. Malcolm would typically crush up the tablet and sprinkle it in Claire's food and drink. Just under a year after the couple wed, on the 27th of May, 1994, Malcolm drugged Claire, got her in the car, and began driving. Malcolm then deliberately crashed their car, sending it over the side of an embankment, and got out, leaving a sedated Claire still in the car before setting it on fire. An off-duty policeman happened to pass by the scene and offered Malcolm help, who twice told the officer that there was no one else in the car before it exploded. His excuse for telling the officer that there was no one else in the car was because he was confused from the crash and not thinking straight. Malcolm told the police that he'd swerved to avoid hitting a motorcycle travelling in the opposite direction who was in the wrong lane. He received a £200,000 payout from Claire's life insurance. Malcolm spent a week in hospital after the crash until doctors decided he suffered no injuries in the crash after extensive testing, although he claimed he'd suffered an injury to his neck and even went as far as wearing a neck brace to the funeral. Claire's brother recalls encountering Malcolm at her funeral. Quote, "I had a very firm grip of his hand. He was actually squeezing my hand. Most people had their heads down, and I glanced at him and he was full of tears, as I was. And that convinced me, up until 3 years ago, that he had lost his wife in an accident. In reality, I was holding the hand of her murderer." End quote. The suspicion didn't stop at the funeral, though. People remained suspicious after Claire's death and funeral. A police officer investigated the case in his spare time. He just felt like something was off with it. There were a few reasons he had concerns about Malcolm's story of events. Claire had not been able to escape from the car, which we now know is because she was sedated with temazepam, but obviously at the time no one knew that. There were also no skid marks on the road, which contradicted Malcolm claiming he swerved to avoid a motorbike, indicating that the car was moving slowly. The police officer wasn't the only one who had his suspicions, though. Several firefighters that attended the scene shared his concern. One firefighter said at the trial, quote, "I still think, why didn't the person who was there not pull the person out the vehicle?" End quote. With another fireman telling the BBC, quote, "We all thought it was a bit hooky. There was no sign of violence to the vehicle. For a car to be stopped or parked and burst into flames does not occur, unless it's in the movies." End quote. A friend of Claire's substantiated these thoughts, telling a public prosecutor in Scotland that Claire had told her she'd been in an accident months earlier when Malcolm was driving, an accident that was very similar to the one that killed her. A year after Claire's death, Malcolm was living in Saudi Arabia and made a brief friendship with a woman called Brenda Grant. The friendship began over the phone, but the two eventually met up and a relationship ensued. Brenda recalls Malcolm as a man who would turn on the waterworks in order to avoid certain conversations, and who would constantly offer her drugs, which she always refused. Brenda states that she feels lucky to still be alive. Malcolm's next proper relationship was when he married oncology nurse Felicity Drum in April 1997, after meeting her at a dinner party in Saudi Arabia.
He had a very good sense of humour. He could be very personable, very attentive. I think that one of his skills and one of the reasons for such success that he's had is that he makes a study of the people he's around, establishes what their interests are, and then adopts them so that, you know, you find all these things that you have in common.
Within a year of meeting, the couple wed in New Zealand, and Felicity subsequently gave birth to a baby boy. It would be revealed years later at trial that on their honeymoon, Malcolm gave Felicity a drink, and after she drank it, she slept for 36 hours.
And then my next memory was of waking up, having a shower, coming out to the kitchen to get breakfast organised, and that was when he told me that I'd been asleep for 36 hours.
How did you react to that?
Well, I was completely bewildered by it. And, you know, challenged him on it. What do you mean I've been asleep for 36 hours? How can I have been asleep, you know, for that length of time?
Was he alarmed by it?
No, he seemed totally relaxed. And I said to him, you know, if I hadn't woken up this morning, would you have gone and sought some help? And he said, oh, yes, I was going to just see how you were, and if you still hadn't appeared to be your normal self, I would have done something about it.
On another occasion, she slept for 18 hours. And she also suffered with double vision, with blood tests showing abnormalities with her liver function. Having done some research, temazepam doesn't seem to have any effect on liver function, so I have to assume he was drugging her with something else that affected her liver, or that this was just an incidental finding. Malcolm upped his game with Felicity, not just trying to kill her, but first setting not one, but three house fires during their marriage. The first fire was set in September 1997, not long after the couple got married. This fire took place in the cottage they lived in together in Line of Skene in Aberdeen, and he set fire to the living room furniture. The second fire took place in January 1999 in a house they were intending to buy in Bayswater in Auckland, as they were planning on moving to New Zealand to be closer to Felicity's family. The final fire took place just a month later, in February 1999, this time in Felicity's parents' house, where he set fire to an armchair. It's thought that he started this fire perhaps in an effort to persuade Felicity to buy life insurance. As I mentioned, the couple were planning on buying a house in New Zealand, and I believe they were staying with Felicity's parents until the sale went through. Malcolm was having trouble with transferring his money from Scotland to a bank account in New Zealand. Well, that's what he told Felicity. The truth is, I'm not sure there was any money in Scotland to begin with. He was just using this as an excuse to buy time before he killed her. The couple had a deadline to pay for the house, the 12th of February 1999. On that day, Malcolm knew he had no way out, and knew he had to act there and then. Otherwise it would be revealed that he had no money, and I don't think he could handle that being common knowledge. I think he was too proud for anyone to know that he was bankrupt. Malcolm and Felicity drove to the bank that day, but as they were driving, Malcolm suddenly told Felicity that the steering wheel had stopped working. They swerved all over the road, but when Felicity tried the steering wheel, she found it was working perfectly fine. Still, they swerved across two lanes before the car ended up in a ditch. Malcolm immediately jumped out of the car and went round to the boot. I assume he had petrol in there to set the car on fire. It was later revealed that Felicity had been sedated, and I think Malcolm was hoping that the sedative effect would have lasted longer than it did so he could kill Felicity. It's believed that Malcolm tried to murder her for the £1 million life insurance he'd set up for her himself, after the three house fires he set didn't persuade her to get life insurance. Felicity's parents already had their suspicions about Malcolm, but whilst they were driving to the bank, their fears were substantiated when they found documents relating to the life insurance and the fact that Malcolm had no money in his bank account back in England, as he had claimed he did. Her parents immediately began repeatedly trying to get hold of Felicity to warn her that he may not be the man she thought he was. Felicity recounted her ordeal to the Daily Record in 2014. Quote, I saw Malcolm about 300 yards down the track, pushing our son away in his buggy. I answered the phone and it was my dad, saying, wherever you are, you have to come home right now. It doesn't matter what Malcolm says, you have to get back home immediately. I called to Malcolm and he had a complete meltdown. He screamed at me, what the hell are you doing awake? He said I shouldn't get up and to go back to sleep while he took our son for a walk in the buggy. He wanted to stay, but I said something major had happened at home and we had to go back. As we pulled up outside my parents' house, he said, your dad is going to tell you a lot of nonsense about me and your money. He left me and our son at the house and he left before my parents got back. End quote.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Four warrants were issued for Malcolm's arrest after he failed to turn up to court on several charges, with a police officer later stating, quote, he failed to appear at court and full warrants were issued. They are still alive. Two of them are for arson, the third is for selling, giving, supplying, or administering a drug, and the fourth is for disabling or stupefying his victim, his then-wife. The arson charges relate to a fire at the home of his then-wife's parents, end quote. Felicity later confronted Malcolm, who she described as a psychopath, about his attempts to kill her, and all he said was that she would have died happy.
I felt so humiliated at the breathtaking extent of his deception and how I was so immersed in it that I couldn't see it. You know, hindsight's a wonderful thing when it's all laid out in front of you and you can see clear patterns and obviously look at things in a different light.
Malcolm didn't stop with Felicity. After he fled New Zealand in 2000, he began a relationship with Christina Willis in 2002. Whilst there's no evidence that Malcolm tried to kill Christina, he regularly stole money from her, burnt a computer hard drive in her garden, and told her he had cancer, a lie that he would use again with his next and final victim. Christina would later go on to tell the court at Malcolm's trial that he'd suggested that they both change their wills in each other's favour. Malcolm left Christina days after telling her he had leukaemia, and that the diagnosis had been awful news, but in reality he left her because he'd found another woman who was independently wealthy and decided to move on to her instead. Simone Bernardi was Malcolm's last victim of his mental and physical abuse. He met her in December 2005 at a hospital they both worked at in Scotland and planned to marry her bigamously. Malcolm also told Simone that he had terminal leukaemia and went as far as shaving his head to convince her he was having chemotherapy. Malcolm moved in with Simone the following month after she became concerned about his health as he was undergoing chemotherapy, and by February 2006, just a couple of months after they got together, Simone had already changed her will to leave her entire estate, including her £270,000 house, to Malcolm. Malcolm and Simone's relationship moved fast, with them unsuccessfully trying IVF treatment. In September 2006, under a year after the couple got together, Malcolm proposed to Simone in a hotel in Scotland, and later went on to buy her a £6,000 diamond ring. Felicity Drum's sister, Jane, was on a work assignment in Leeds in 2006, when she talked to a senior police officer there about her sister's experience with Malcolm Webster. This put Malcolm onto police's radar, and they started an inquiry into him, with Scottish police interviewing Jane. Police presented Simone with an Osman letter in 2008 at the hospital she worked at as a theatre manager, which warned her about Malcolm's past, informed her that Malcolm already had a wife and a son, and also warned her that her life would be in danger if she continued her relationship with him. Simone initially dismissed the letter as nonsense, choosing to believe her, quote, fine, well-spoken, nicely dressed, end quote, future husband.
They explained to me they had a letter for me that they would read to me first and then that they would give me to keep, and also warned me that my life would be in danger should I wish to continue my relationship with Malcolm. I thought it was complete nonsense. I'd never heard such a load of bunkum in the whole of my life. This could not be the Malcolm Webster that I knew. and loved.
However, she later revealed that she believed he'd planned on killing her on their honeymoon and that she felt lucky to be alive.
The biggest thing that's hit me this year is that the sailing is most likely to have been where something was going to happen to me. It'd be very easy to drop somebody over the side of a boat, whether it's a push, whether it's been hit over the head with a frying pan. I do believe I'm very lucky. I think, you know, if it wasn't for Strathclyde Police, things may have turned out very, very differently.
Simone was a frequent sailor, and she later stated, quote, "The foil on my life jacket had been punctured, and I hadn't checked my life jacket since I sailed with him. Everybody else's life jackets were fine, so I have pretty much no doubt that the boat was the way it was going to go," end quote. The day after receiving the Osman letter, Simone knew she had to confront Malcolm at the home they shared in Argyll, Scotland, with police in the street outside her house just in case. She did just that. As soon as Simone walked into the house, she said, quote, "I think there's something we need to discuss, namely Felicity. I can probably give you your engagement ring back at this point," end quote. Simone told the Daily Record that in response, Malcolm said, quote, "I wondered when you would find out about Felicity. Who told you?" end quote. As soon as Simone told him that the police had informed her, there was a complete change. She recalls the horrifying moment she realised her fiancé wasn't who she thought he was. Quote, "It was like looking at a completely different person. It was not just that the colour drained from his face, but his whole facial expression changed. The closest I have seen to it was the footage on television of him at the crash scene when the jury were taken there. He was very, very different. It only lasted for a second. I got a brief glimpse of a different man, and the shutters came down and it was gone. The mask had slipped. If I could have disappeared into the floor at that point, I would have done so. That was the only time that I felt my life was in danger. The police were in the street outside, but that did not even cross my mind. It was the scariest situation I have ever been in. It was the ultimate fear, and I have never been faced with a situation like that. I was completely at the mercy of the man before me. I knew that if I made any more, there was the potential it could trigger a violent episode. He had never been violent before, but this was not my Malcolm," end quote. After Simone confronted Malcolm, he knew he'd lost the fight and went upstairs to pack a bag. Within half an hour of Simone confronting him, Malcolm had packed a rucksack and printed off a document to transfer his share of the £53,000 yacht the couple owned to Simone. Simone recalls this as being like a scene from a Hollywood movie. A month after Simone confronted Malcolm and he'd left the home the couple shared, Malcolm walked in to A&E at Aberdeen Royal Infirmary claiming to be suicidal. Simone's house was searched by police in 2007 when they learned that Malcolm had embezzled £5,000 from a local angling club that he was involved in. The police seized the laptop which had been reported stolen by the NHS and a gun that Malcolm claimed was an antique. Operation Field, an investigation into Malcolm Webster, began the following year where the police announced that they would be reinvestigating the death of Claire Morris, Malcolm's first wife. They also reinvestigated the crash in New Zealand. On the 30th of March 2008, Malcolm handed himself in to a police station where he gave a no-comment interview. In December 2008, another woman who Malcolm had been seeing was also presented with an Osman letter, warning her of the danger she was in if she continued seeing Malcolm. A year after the investigation began, in 2009, Malcolm was arrested and charged by the Sheriff of Aberdeen for the murder of Claire Morris, the attempted murder of Felicity Drum, and attempting to bigamously marry Simone Banaji to gain access to her estate. Overall, Operation Field lasted 5 years with 1,000 people being interviewed. Malcolm denied all charges against him, which also included starting a series of fires and several fraud charges, and his trial was the longest ever in Scotland against a single person, starting on the 1st of February 2011. On the 2nd of February, Simone Banaji told the court that Malcolm's spending habits were out of control, and she believed the money he had came from the sale of a flat in Brighton that he'd inherited from his uncle. In regards to Malcolm telling Simone that he had terminal leukemia, Simone told the court that he suffered from 10-30 syndrome, where his dizzy and fainting spells from the cancer treatment occurred like clockwork. She also told the court that Malcolm's fainting spells could be so bad that he'd have to crawl up the stairs to bed, or sometimes she'd even have to carry him. On the 11th of February, all 15 jurors, the judge, and the legal teams visited the location where Claire Morris died. On the 16th, a crash reconstruction expert told the jury that he believed the crash and fire in which Claire died was more than likely staged, stating that he doesn't believe the impact of the crash could have spontaneously caused the vehicle to catch on fire. He also informed the jury that it was his belief that there would have been nothing preventing Claire from escaping the wreck if she had been conscious. On the 24th of March, Felicity Drum took to the stand to tell the court how she slept for 36 hours after accepting a drink from Malcolm on their honeymoon. On the 29th of March, she told the court, quote, "I said it was clear that his intention had been to kill me. He said I would have died happy. I had never been happier. He had given me love, marriage, and a child. In other words, I should be grateful. I felt sick and I felt repulsed by him. I had intended to spend the rest of my life with him," end quote. On the 5th of May, Malcolm took to the stand in his own defence and denied murdering Claire, stating it was an accident, and denied attempting to murder Felicity. The jurors deliberated for less than 4 hours, and Malcolm Webster was found guilty of all charges on the 19th of May 2011 in Glasgow. Needless to say, Peter Morris was elated about this verdict.
"The guilty verdict of murder has proven that Malcolm Webster is a wicked murderer. I feel today is a good day, as the psychological sadism over me and my family and many other people is now broken."
2 months later, on the 5th of July 2011, Malcolm was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum tariff of 30 years. He was subsequently removed from the nursing register, and Simone Bonaggi is reported to have stated that if she had it her way, Malcolm would be placed in solitary confinement, stating, quote, "He's a very good actor and would give Colin Firth a run for his money. He was charming and that's what made him so plausible," end quote.
"My views are, when he goes to prison, he is a clever, clever man. The danger with him, as far as I can figure out, is that he learns from everybody that he meets. If I had my way, I would make sure he was in solitary confinement for the rest of his days, because he will learn, and if he's ever released, he will be an increasing danger in my book to anybody else he meets."
It's been said that Malcolm has told other inmates that he expects to die in prison, and inmates have described him as a fairly boring person. He has tried to appeal his sentence several times, but these have all been either dropped by him or denied by the Scottish Criminal Cases Review Commission. Simone Bonaggi told BBC News Scotland that whilst she will be able to trust people in the future, she would definitely be much more wary of them and more questioning of their motives. Malcolm Webster is a clever, cunning, sociopathic individual who managed to manipulate not just the women who fell in love with him, but whole hospitals where he worked and departments where he claimed he was being treated for leukemia. The best place for a narcissistic individual like Malcolm Webster is behind bars, where no one else is able to fall for his false charm and supposedly kind-hearted, considerate, and mild-mannered demeanour. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a rating and review, and Patreon to consider becoming a patron of Murder & More. To interact with us, you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder & More, Instagram at Murder & More Pod, and Facebook at Murder & More Podcast. To view the sources and pictures for this episode, head over to www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com. Have a great week, and I'll see you all next week for another episode.
Morbidology is a weekly true crime podcast hosted by me, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered.
911 emergency.
My son shot my husband. I need an ambulance. He's bleeding.
Using investigative research combined with primary audio, including 911 calls, interviews, and trial testimony, Morbidology takes a look at some of the world's most heinous murders.
Do you know why you're here?
For a home invasion gone terribly wrong.
Listen to Morbidology now on Himalaya, Apple, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you get podcasts.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.